Thank you very much, Charles. This Lent, we're doing something which we did 2 years ago, which is a shared series with St. Nicholas Kidbrooke. And our curate, Liz Franklin's husband, Paul, is curate there. So we're doing a kind of swap, and we'll both do both talks in both places, if you see what I mean. And last time we did four Psalms, and this time we're going to look at the lives of four different Christians. And I've chosen somebody I didn't know much about, who's called Hudson Taylor. And he played a great part in taking the good news of Jesus Christ to China. You may know I was lucky enough to go to China for 10 days last year with Bible Society, and I saw for myself something of the enormous growth of the church in China. And a lot of that goes back to Hudson Taylor's vision for reaching the whole of China with the gospel in the 19th century. And certainly I found his story very inspiring. Now, if you're new or visiting, let me just say that we are not one of those churches that spend all their time talking about Victorian men with beards from 1850. In fact, we never do that. It drives me up the wall when churches seem to wish it was 1850. But except that today we are doing exactly that, just for a change. So, now, Hudson Taylor's parents ran a chemist shop in Barnsley. They were both Methodists, and his father, for some reason, had a particular interest in China. And before his first child, called James Hudson, always known as Hudson, was born in 1832, he prayed that his son would work for God in China. It was a very Christian home, and Hudson's father would often tell his children that they should love their Bible, that God cannot lie, God cannot mislead you, and he cannot fail you. Can we have the first picture up, Douglas? Yes, there he is. That's Hudson Taylor. He started work at 15 as a clerk in his father's at a bank in Barnsley, sorry. And there he heard people say for the first time that Christians were hypocrites and it was foolish to believe. And so for a while he gave up praying and found going to church boring. But when he was 17, he read a booklet about a coalman who'd become a Christian on his deathbed, a wonderful Victorian story, which was a true story, I think. And the coalman had been particularly struck by Jesus' words on the cross, "It is finished." And as the coalman thought about that, he realized that Jesus had done everything needed for us to be right with God and had put his faith in him. So it was a very simple story, but it made sense to Hudson Taylor. And he knelt down and committed his life to Christ. He didn't know that his mother, who was then 50 miles away visiting a friend, was praying for his conversion at that very moment. Well, he then worked for 4 years with his father in the chemist shop, became an expert in dispensing medicines, and then went to be an assistant for a doctor in Hull. And although he wasn't paid very much then, he gave away 60% of his earnings. And he said, "The more I gave away, the happier I became." He also never reminded the doctor to pay him. And the doctor was quite absent-minded and often forgot. But Taylor said, "I needed to learn to depend on God, because when I went to China, I would have no one else to depend on." During that time, he went to London and met a German missionary who'd worked in China. And the missionary said, when he saw Taylor's blonde hair and blue eyes, that the Chinese will run from you in terror. Well, Taylor said, "God has called me, and he knows the color of my hair and my eyes." During this time, he was engaged to a young woman called Marianne, who he was very much in love with. They were engaged for 3 years, but she didn't seem very interested in China, and her parents wouldn't allow him to go, wouldn't allow her to go. So after 3 years, they broke off the engagement, because Hudson was convinced that God was calling him to China. Well, a new mission society called the China Evangelization Society had just been formed, and when Taylor was 20, he set off as their first missionary. And he hadn't yet completed his medical studies, so he had no formal qualifications. It took him 6 months to get there, which is the time it took in those days. He was nearly shipwrecked on the way, and when he arrived in China, he found there was a major civil war going on. That's just a typical picture of China around that time. There were quite a number of English missionaries there, mainly working for the Church Mission Society, including a number on our mission board, which if you've never looked at it, you should really go and study. And the CMS only took ordained men with university degrees, and they were paid something like 10 times what Hudson Taylor was paid. He had no degree and no qualifications, but he started learning Chinese and trying to speak to people. And he found that he was often referred to as a black devil because of his dark coat and foreign clothes. So he made the decision to wear Chinese clothes and to shave the front of his head and dye his hair black and grow a pigtail in the Chinese style. That's not him, that's someone else from around that time dressed in Chinese clothes. And here is a later photo of him. I couldn't find a photo of him in Chinese clothes when he was younger, but that's him a bit older in the middle there. Now, to many of the British in Shanghai, his actions were shocking. So the merchant community, and indeed many of the missionaries, they believed that their dignity rested on being British and their British dress and habits. And to them, Taylor had gone native and lost face and had broken the magic spell of the foreigner. So he was seen as a traitor by many of his countrymen. And at first he did find he was treated with a bit less respect by some of the Chinese people. But his medical skills helped to change that, and he found that women and children in particular were much more willing to come to him because he dressed in Chinese clothes. And he concluded that they would be a great help to him when he began to move inland, away from the coastal areas where all the foreigners tended to congregate. Now, at this time, many of the British were heavily involved in promoting the opium trade, and they defeated the Chinese in a war, defending their rights to trade in opium. And of course, opium was doing, which is basically heroin, was doing enormous damage right across the country. On one of Taylor's early trips inland, he hired some porters to help him with his baggage. And after they'd gone 6 miles, they couldn't go any further, and he realized that they were heavy opium smokers. And that night, they disappeared with all his baggage. And he lost everything, including things like his sister's photo and the Bible his mother had given him. And a bit after that, all his medical supplies were destroyed in a fire in Shanghai. So he had lots of setbacks. He moved down the coast to work at a hospital run by a British doctor, where much of his time was spent helping opium addicts. And again, then fighting broke out between the British and Chinese over opium, and there was a plot formed in this place called Ningbo to murder all the foreigners when they met together for worship on Sunday night in the CMS missionary's house. And the chief magistrate of the city had given permission for the attack, but one of those involved warned a Chinese servant who worked there, and he told the missionaries, and so the plot came to nothing. Now, at that time, he met Maria, who was the daughter of missionary parents who died, and although her guardian was strongly opposed to their marriage because Hudson Taylor wasn't the right sort, wasn't from the right class as she saw it, they were eventually married, and their daughter Grace was born, and Grace sadly died at 7, but on the right there, that's Hudson Taylor's son Howard from a bit later. I used that photo just to show you the kind of Chinese dress that they wore. And around that time, the wife of the doctor who ran the hospital died also of cholera, and Hudson and Maria took over the running of the hospital. And the mortality rate among missionaries was very high. It was reckoned that of the 200 male missionaries in China, 40 died of illness, and 51 of their wives also died. But Hudson and Maria found their services were in great demand. They were treating more and more people. And one day the cook came to them and said, "The last bag of rice has just been opened." So Taylor said, "Don't worry, the Lord will provide." And very shortly after, a letter arrived from a friend of his who'd inherited a legacy from his father. And he said he didn't need the money. He was enclosing £50 for the work. And again, Hudson Taylor found that God provided for his needs. He said that God's work done in God's way will never lack God's supplies. Well, after a while, he found he was exhausted by the combination of medical work and preaching, and he was suffering from TB, and they said that he wouldn't survive the summer, so he came back to England with Maria, and he was 28 and Maria was 23 at that time. And they stayed in Britain for 5 years, and gradually, Hudson Taylor's health recovered, And during that time, he toured the country and wrote many books to persuade people to go to the 11 unreached provinces in the interior of China, where no one had ever heard of Jesus Christ. And he talked to all the different missionary societies at the time, but all of them said the same thing. They said, "We're so busy on the coast, and we've got all our resources are fully employed on the coast, and so we've got nothing left to go to the interior." Well, where would the European Christians be if the apostles had waited for better conditions, wondered Taylor. One day he went to a large church in Brighton, but he found he was unable to bear the sight of 1,000 Christians rejoicing in their own security while millions were perishing from lack of knowledge of the Christian gospel in China. And he said he felt it was the opposite of Jesus' parable of the lost sheep. Jesus said, "If one is lost, then leave the 99 and go and seek the lost one." But here he said, we stay at home with the one and we ignore the 99 who are lost. He went out onto Brighton Beach and he said this, "I wandered on the sands alone in great spiritual agony. And there the Lord conquered my unbelief and I surrendered myself to God for this service." He prayed that he could start a new mission to reach the interior, and he asked for 24 workers, two for each of the 11 interior provinces and two for Mongolia. And he went back to London and he opened a bank account in the name of the China Inland Mission, CIM, with just £10. But as he put it later, it was £10 and all the promises of God. And he decided that the China Inland Mission would have six distinctive features. One, that it wouldn't come from any particular denomination, but from all the Christian churches. And he always tried to keep all the Christian churches and denominations together. And his motto was all one in Christ Jesus. Secondly, its workers would have no guaranteed salary, but they would trust in God to provide for their needs and share what they had. Thirdly, no appeal for funds would be made and no names of donors would be published. Instead, he would wait for God to lay the mission's needs on people's hearts. And he always refused to have a collection after he'd spoken at a meeting, which greatly shocked people because that was very normal and expected. But often they found that those who might have given a pound or two on the night later sent a check for much more. Fourthly, it would always be directed locally in China by people on the ground, not by committees thousands of miles away. Fifthly, it would aim to reach the whole of China and to go to the places where the other missionaries had not gone. And then sixthly, his missionaries would wear Chinese clothes and worship in Chinese style and use Chinese style buildings, not the Gothic churches that others were building. There's a church in Shanghai that looks just like this. It's amazing. But he said, "I'm not going to do that." And he'd really heard what Paul said about, to the Jews, I became like a Jew. To reach the Jews, I became all things to all people. I gave away everything of my own identity for their sake. He was also very different in the people that he accepted to serve in the mission. Unlike the other agencies, it was open to people with little or no formal education, to working class people as well as middle class, to women as well as men. And what mattered, said Taylor, was whether they really knew and trusted God. He was always convinced, which wasn't widely thought at the time, that women had a crucial role in spreading the gospel, particularly, he said, in reaching families and the next generation. So this is a picture of the party that went out, the first party, on the ship called the Lammermuir in 1866, and it's Hudson and Maria, their four children, and then 16 others, nine of whom were unmarried women. None of them except the Taylors had ever been to China before, and they were the largest party of missionaries ever sent out. And they were widely mocked in Shanghai as the pigtail mission, because they all dressed in Chinese clothes, even the women, which was seen as very scandalous at the time. This is from a bit later, a group called the Cambridge Seven, seven Cambridge graduates who also joined the mission. And that's a later picture of Taylor in his Chinese clothes. Now, on our missionary board behind me are two sisters who went out with CIM to China. Oops, there we go. And they are Miss L. Goodman, who went out in 1875. Let me just show you her. There. And her sister, Miss K. Goodman, who's Catherine Goodman. I found her in the archives, who went out a bit later in 1883. Miss L. Goodman stayed for 25 years. So just imagine these, and they both went with CIM, you can see that in the right-hand one. All our earlier ones went with CMS, which was the posh mission, as you'd expect from Blackheath, but these two went out with CIM. And just imagine those two young Victorian women going out on their own, dressing in Chinese clothes. That's a picture I found in the CIM archives. I don't know who that woman at the back is. Much taller than all the Chinese. But going to a remote bit of China, speaking Chinese, eating Chinese food, living among the Chinese for years and years. It's remarkable, isn't it? I don't have time to tell you about all the adventures they had and how the work grew. There was a major riot fairly early on in one of the Chinese cities called Yangzhou because rumors spread that the Christians were eating babies and other terrible things. And both Taylor and his wife were seriously injured in that riot and thought that they were going to die. Sadly, his wife Maria did die not long afterwards of TB at the age of 33. Several of his children died, as they often did in Victorian times. Taylor remarried and had several more children. And he came back to the UK several times and also went to Australia and America, telling people about the great need for people to go to China. And it's said that people were often disappointed when they first met him. He was quite small and fairly undistinguished, nothing special about him. But when he spoke, he had a kind of humility and a radiance that really had a huge impact on people. Apparently they rejected 5 out of 6 of the people who offered to go. But over 1,000 men and women from all denominations went as missionaries to China, including from the US, Canada, Sweden, and Australia. And from 1866 to 1898, not one single CIM life was lost through violence or accident or traveling, though many did die of disease. But in 1898 came the Boxer Rebellion, which was directed largely against foreigners. And CIM suffered more than any other mission agency. 58 of their missionaries were killed out of 130 Protestant missionaries who died. After it was over, the British government, using gunboat diplomacy as usual, insisted that compensation of £70 million was paid to the mission agencies and to Chinese Christians for the life and property lost. But CIM refused to accept it. And they said, we wanted to show the meekness and gentleness of Christ. And later people felt that had been a very wise decision. Taylor died in Hunan province in central China at the age of 73 in 1905. But the work continued and the number of Chinese converts continued to rise from about 100,000 in 1900 to 700,000 in 1950. Still very small, of course, in relation to the size of China. And then what seemed like disaster happened. The communists took over. They came to power between 1949 and 1952 and they threw out every single foreign missionary. And the CIM missionaries were deployed all over Asia. The organization changed its name to OMF, Overseas Missionary Fellowship, whom we still support today. And the church in China pretty much disappeared for about 30 years. It went underground. But wonderfully, as I saw myself, it didn't die, it survived. And it survived particularly in the remote inland rural areas, exactly the place that China Inland Mission had gone, where the government couldn't control it. And as you may have heard me talk about before, today there is an extraordinary Christian revival in China. It's reckoned there are about 100 million Christians in China going to church, far more than Europe, far more than the 67 million members of the Communist Party. And I think you can genuinely say that a lot of that started with the man from a chemist shop in Barnsley. And his memory is still revered in China today, particularly with the way he became Chinese and lived among the Chinese people as a Chinese person. He had a passionate conviction that Jesus came to seek and save the lost, and that everyone needed to hear the good news, and unless we went and told them, they wouldn't hear it. And he trusted God to provide for his needs. One historian said that no other missionary since Paul has had a wider vision or carried out a more systematic plan of evangelism over a broader area than Hudson Taylor. 1,000 missionaries, 125 schools, 300 stations of work, 500 helpers in all 18 provinces of China. He spent 51 years of his life serving the Chinese people. So it's very different from our world today, isn't it? But in many ways, inspiring, I think. And inspiring that people went out from this very church to serve and gave their lives to share the good news. So we're going to sing another song, which is called Across the Lands, and it's about Jesus coming for the whole world. So when the music starts, do stand.